I actually met Rebecca in Gray's Inn Road and we took some photographs and then we walked all the way from Gray's Inn Road to here, thinking it wouldn't take that long, but it did. Okay, fantastic. Rebecca, what are we going to call this podcast?
Well, I quite liked going postal, investigating the post office scandal.
Are you still stuck on that? Is that
I
your...
mean, I could lose going postal
Well, that's the
if you think
thing.
that's the easiest.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
We need to come up with a title because we are currently recording the first episode.
Yeah, we really do. I think we're just going to have to make a call.
Well, hang on. I can't see what I've sent you now. Have you not got my email that I've just sent you?
No.
Bobbins. Where is it? What did you like going postal investigating the post office scandal?
Yeah, or just investigating the post office scandal, which is boring but straightforward.
Or the Post Office Horizon Scandal podcast or the Post Office Scandal podcast?
Maybe the post office scandal podcast. Unless we think there's going to be an issue with using the words post office. I guess we'll just have to deal with
No,
that
I've done enough panoramas with the title
if you've written
Post
enough
Office.
books.
The Great Post Office Scandal. The Post Office Scandal podcast. Because then that covers a multitude of things. Go on.
The only reason I like the investigating the
Yes.
post office scandal
Yeah.
is that it sounds active.
But is it then investigating the Post Office Scandal podcast? That's the problem. Because
Do we have to have podcasts
I
in the
don't
name?
know. Simon the producer says we don't have to. Investigating the Post. Well, it's your idea, so you can have the call on the title. Are we going to lose going postal?
Yeah.
Okay. Investigating the Post Office Scandal. IPOS. IPOS. IPOS.
I think investigating is fair because, I mean, it's not as though we haven't.
True. Okay. I don't know why I'm resisting because it's not my idea and I'm very
Well,
obedient. No,
what's
it's
it?
fine.
No, what? Which
Well,
one is your favourite?
the only one, yeah, is the Post Office Scandal podcast.
Post
POSP.
office scandal.
POSP.
Yeah, I'm happy with either.
Should we leave it to Simon? Okay. Good. Right.
Should we do that?
Should we do that? Okay. Well, you can start the podcast now.
Okay. Hello and welcome to Investigating the Post Office Scandal. My name is Rebecca Thompson and I'm a freelance journalist with a special interest in this story.
And my name is Nick Wallace. I'm also a journalist who has a special interest in this scandal. And the aim of this podcast is to dig into areas of this story which don't get much airtime, find some interesting guests to chew things over with, and generally try and stay on top of the multiple strands to this scandal.
But first, if you've not come across the Post Office Horizon scandal before, this episode is an introduction to the story and an introduction to us, your podcast hosts.
Now, summarising this scandal is tricky because its roots stretch back more than 25 years, but I am going to attempt to do it, and Rebecca is going to interject, take notes, remind me of what I've forgotten, and also tell us about her entry point into the story many moons ago.
So, if you're sitting comfortably, then we'll begin.
The Post Office Horizon scandal has its roots in a disastrous IT system called Horizon, which the Post Office rolled out to 20,000 post offices in 1999-2000. It didn't work, and it created holes in postmasters' accounts. This is important because postmasters are self-employed small business people who are entirely responsible for the post office money that comes in and out of their individual branches. And they have to present a settled set of accounts to the post office at the end of, in those days, every week. Now, before Horizon came along, they would fill out this massive spreadsheet which had ledger entries for all the dozens of different products that the post office sold, and of course the amount of money that was going over the counter in benefits, etc., and the like. And the automation basically turned this accounting system online. But what it did, without anyone really noticing, was load all of the business risk for any problems with the accounts onto the sub-postmaster without giving them any control of the accounting system that they were using to do their accounts. And so when these holes in their accounts started appearing, the post office said, well, it's your responsibility, they're your accounts, You've got to make these accounts good, and that's what's set out in the sub-postmaster contract. And this IT system just, I mean, it looked like it was working most of the time, and it probably did work 99% of the time, but for the 1% of people for whom it didn't work, the results were catastrophic. They were finding themselves with huge, sometimes, holes in their accounts, tens of thousands of pounds in the most extreme cases. And first of all, they had to try and make them good by, and often would do so from their own savings or from the retail takings in their shop. But when it got to a point where they basically shoveled all their money into this black hole in their accounts, they would raise their hand and the post office would say, well, I mean, you've obviously been misappropriating this money. We're going to charge you with theft or false accounting if they hid their discrepancies. And so over a period of 14, 13 years from 1999 to 2013, the post office sacked and suspended unilaterally thousands of people. And then it went after hundreds of them through the criminal courts, and more than 700 people ended up with criminal convictions, many of which, most of which, the post office has said themselves, they believe would be false prosecutions. Now, the post office became... Well, let's get to your entry point in this story, Rebecca. So you first heard about it when?
2008.
Tell me your story.
So I was working at Computer Weekly at the time as a reporter. And I think Alan Bates had written to us a few years before, but we hadn't been able to take it anywhere.
And Alan Bates was then, I suppose, the chair of the... No, he wasn't by the time you got involved, was he? He was just a postmaster who had been sacked by the post office in 2003.
Yeah, I can remember the year, but he refused to...
He refused to sign off accounts that had holes in them, which he blamed on the IT system. Mm-hmm. And the post office just sacked him and took his £100,000 investment in his business away from him. Mm-hmm. So he'd got in touch, I think it was in 2004.
I think so, which was before I was there. In 2008, Lee Castleton wrote to us.
Who's Lee Castleton?
Lee Castleton is another postmaster, another former postmaster. And Tony Collins, who was at the time the executive editor at Computer Weekly, gave me his letter and said, do you want to give him a call and just see if there's anything in it? And Lee had actually sent us his computer logs. He sent us a sort of long list of complicated looking documents, which unfortunately I couldn't do anything with. I think he was hoping for a little bit more practical help, but he just got me on the end of the phone. But I spoke to him and heard his story and heard what had happened to him. And it went from there. We sort of, between us, we found, I think, I can't remember exactly how many people we ended up speaking to behind the scenes, but it was more than ended up in our original piece.
Yeah.
Because it was really tricky persuading people to speak on the record.
And did Lee put you in contact with Alan, or did you dig up the old letter from Alan? How did you find the other sub-postmasters?
I really can't remember how I got in contact with Alan, whether Tony still had his letter, whether Lee knew him. It would have been one of those. I really can't remember. And I also really can't remember how we found other people. I remember we found Jo Hamilton because she had already had a Daily Mail article written about her, about the villagers that she lived with, her neighbours doing a whip round, helping her to pay her debts.
Because Jo Hamilton was the sub-postmaster in South Warnborough in Hampshire.
Yeah.
And yes, the entire village rallied round to not only give the post office what they were demanding or what they were claiming was a debt to them, but they also all turned up in court for her. And the Daily Mail reported that appearance. I think it was at Guildford Crown Court. I might be wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah.
As a sort of statement that they didn't believe in her. In her guilt.
Yeah, yeah. So you found her through... And she was still working at South Warnborough Village Stores, even though she'd lost her post office. She was still working, so she was actually quite easy to find from my experience of trying to get a hold of her and Seema Misra's experience of trying to get a hold of her. We'll move on to that. So, carry on.
And then I think... I think it must have been between us, me, Alan, Lee, we found others who had similar kind of problems. We spent lots of time getting as much proof together as possible. Any letters they'd written at the time, kind of call logs to the Horizon helpline, anything like that. And we published in May 2009. It was a bit tricky getting it through our lawyers, obviously.
What was the issue?
The issue was not getting sued by Fujitsu.
Who designed
built Horizon
and operated Horizon and still do.
Yeah.
But you didn't mention Fujitsu, did you?
We didn't. No, not in the end.
So you focused on the post office.
We focused on the post office. So we focused, the sort of big question for us was IT systems do go wrong. That's not the kind of the issue. Nobody's accusing any IT system of having to be perfect. The issue here seems to be how the post office is managing it when it does go wrong.
So what was the gist of the piece? What did you write about?
The piece was, I guess, asking questions about the IT. I mean, obviously, we couldn't prove anything at that point. All we could do was sort of tell the stories that the postmasters had told us. And so it was just, I guess, pointing to these problems that people had had, that several people had had. And in good faith, kind of asking, there seems to be something up here. It's probably worthy of a proper investigation.
What was it like speaking to people whose lives had been turned upside down?
I mean, as you will have experienced, it's really upsetting. I think, and Lee is he's a good storyteller. He's like an emotional man, and you really get drawn into very easily drawn into how these people's lives have been affected. So it is upsetting. That's what kind of kept me motivated on that story, because obviously it was a real slow burn.
What was the post office like to deal with? Did you get any response? Did you get any suggestion that they might give you an interview or more than a statement? I mean, how were they reacting to your questions at the time? Because this was new territory, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think they were probably terrified by the idea of any member of the press questioning that system at that point, because it was obviously the first time that anyone from the media had called them, and they were quite defensive, quite aggressive in saying that there was definitely nothing wrong with Horizon. It had been exonerated in court, and they kind of stuck to that line at that point.
Did you get any legal threats?
I can't remember. They
usually go to the editor, don't they?
So yeah, you don't get to see them. Exactly. There was definitely complaints about me. And I think they.
Really?
I think they wrote to my editor complaining about the story and complaining, saying I completely got the wrong end of the stick. And I think that's how they managed to keep the story out of other newspapers once we published it. Because I think if a journalist on one of the nationals called them, they would just say Computer Weekly have completely got it wrong. Kind of a bit like what they did to certain postmasters, kind of saying probably like a bit naive, a bit incompetent. I think that's how they managed to.
Yeah, the post office when I was working on this story would talk to my editors.
Yeah.
And say, oh, you know, he's.
Yeah.
They shielded me from that. My editors, they just said, you know, get on with it. You're doing a good job. But that was the post office's strategy, to go in at the editorial level and lean on people. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to work, frankly, because, you were expecting some pickup from that story.
Yeah, we were hoping, because Tony had done so many, well, you know, several of the journalists at Computer Weekly had done stories that got picked up before. And so Tony had some contacts. I thought it was going to make quite a big splash. It did not.
the next, I think, significant thing from my perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong, was Tarot Now, the Welsh language investigation.
They did a really big investigation.
Well, and the connection between this is quite strange, but it shows how the world worked. A cameraman who had worked with one of the journalists who filmed the story of Noel Thomas being sentenced. Noel Thomas was a Anglesey postmaster who was sent to prison for, again, having inexplicable discrepancies in his accounts, and he was accused of false accounting and theft. The cameraman who was working on that story read the Computer Weekly article, saw that Noel Thomas was one of your case studies, and told another journalist working on the Tarot Now that this could be a potential area that was ripe for investigation. And so that's what put their investigations team in touch with your article, and they went, ooh, let's go to work on this. And they grubbed up, I think, more than 30 sub-postmasters who said they'd lost their jobs or been prosecuted as a result of the Horizon system. And Noel and Joe Hamilton were very much the stars of that particular half hour. And it was your investigation and that Tarot Now investigation which I think led to the formation of the meeting which created the Justice for Sub-Postmasters Alliance in November 2009. Do you want to pick up the story from there for a bit?
I can for a bit. Well, can I? probably not in not as much detail as you can, but they formed that, and then I think was Seema involved by that point?
Seema's
case was a bit later.
Seema actually got sent to prison in 2010. Because I spoke to her husband Davinder when she was in prison, and that's how I came into the story in late 2010. But I think the first thing that happened as a result of the Justice for Sub Postmasters Alliance, we'll call it the JFSA from here on in, the first thing that the JFSA recommended its new members do was write to their MPs, which is what got James Arbuthnot, the North East Hampshire MP, involved. He had Joe Hamilton in his constituency and David Bristow, who featured in my first investigation in 2011. I say my investigation, BBC Inside Out South's investigation, because it was very much a group effort. And so he became the de facto leader of the parliamentary group. And it was the MPs, bolstered by Alan Bates at the JFSA, who essentially forced the post office's hand into getting independent investigators in to have a look at the Horizon system, which was when Second Sight, Ron Warmington and Ian Henderson entered the scene. Mm-hmm. So that was announced in 2012, and their investigation came through in 2013. And instantly, all the prosecutions of sub-postmasters stops. And what we now know is that the post office had become aware that it basically prosecuted people unfairly due to lack of proper disclosure. But it kept it secret. And it kept it secret for 6 years until it was all cracked open in the High Court case, which started in 2018, or the trial, which started in 2018 and eventually concluded in December 2019. And then since then, we've had more than 70 people who've had their convictions quashed. We've had £1 billion put aside by the government for compensation. What else have we had? We've got the setting up of the statutory inquiry, which this podcast hopes to cover in as much detail as we're able. And what else have we got? We've got the ongoing issue of compensation for the people whose lives have been ruined. And there are three different strands of compensation. There's the historical shortfall scheme for people who weren't convicted or prosecuted. I think I'm right in saying certainly convicted. We've got the compensation which is being set aside for people who've had their convictions quashed. And then you've also got the compensation for the 555 sub-postmasters who took part in the High Court litigation, who got locked into a settlement agreement from which they only got a pittance out of because so much of their settlement went on success fees and legal fees for the funders who helped them take it all to court. So that's kind of where we are.
And a lot of unanswered questions as well, which is kind of where we wanted to do a podcast.
Yeah, and yes, exactly. And lots of strands which sort of spin off from this about failings in the criminal justice system, legal failings. There's an investigation being carried out by the Solicitors Regulation Authority. I hope I got that right, the SRA. There is also a criminal investigation at the moment, which is only, as far as we're aware, questioned two individuals, both of whom are former Fujitsu employees, but has stated that they will take their investigation wherever it goes, which may include post office staff. So we're at a really interesting point in this story, and I think you came up with the brilliant idea of a podcast to try and pull some of those strands together, explore some of those strands. And I mean, there's all sorts of material which never makes it into print, which ends up on the cutting room floor in the various broadcast. Lots of journalists are working on this now, but it's still a huge story, and I think so. That's kind of why we're here. Is that right?
Yeah.
So, tell me a little bit about what you did after you left Computer Weekly, because you sort of you took a hiatus from this story for a bit, didn't you?
I did. I went to Retail Week for a few years, which is another B2B trade publication. I did a little bit of time at Draper's. I just did a tour of B2B magazines. I did a few different things. I mean, I went freelance in July 2021, and that kind of has given me the time and availability and definitely the desire to get back into the story.
Yeah, well, it's been great that we've stayed in touch since, I think it was 2015, yeah, when I first made contact with you in a tweet, which is, there's a story to tell about that another time. But we also ought to say that Computer Weekly has continued banging the drum about
really
this story. The heroic Carl Flinders has done an admirable job in putting together pretty much, you know, daily reports when something happens, and a very, very useful timeline. If anyone ever wants to actually dig into this story, go to Computer Weekly and have a look at their post office scandal timeline, because comprehensive, I think, is one of the words you could use about it.
Yeah, Carl picked up as soon as I left in 2010, and he has been covering it ever since.
Yeah, he's been documenting pretty much every twist of this tale.
So what has been the most significant moment for you? Because you've been covering it for a long time.
Yeah, so I came into this in 2010. And that's when I met Devinder Misra, and through a few odd tweets, he let on that he had a story to tell. And after I'd finished my show, I was doing the breakfast show on BBC Surrey at the time, I gave him a call and spent 40 minutes on the phone to him. And it was one of those stories where you think, if this guy's telling the truth, this is huge. This is unbelievably ridiculous, if he's telling the truth. So I went to see him, because it's always interesting to see how people are living and to see the whites of their eyes. And one of the things that struck me about the conversation we had on the phone and the conversation that I had with him face to face was that the story didn't waver at all. And of course, he was able to point to your brilliant article and the existence of the Justice for Sub-Postmasters Alliance. And I think I was very quickly in contact with Alan Bates, who was incredibly helpful. And I took the story on the recommendation of my boss, Nikki Holliday at BBC Surrey, to Jane French at Inside Out South. And then that got me onto the story. But when it went out, and of course, you know, the BBC's investigations arm does a very good job of bulletproofing it in the same way that you guys at Computer Weekly would have done. And I was much more confident that this was a big story by the time we'd put it out. So I thought, well, this has to get traction. This must be happening all over the country. And so I tried to get wider traction off it within the BBC, national BBC. I took it to Private Eye. Didn't get much of a response, and also my third child was being born and I was doing a 6 day a week breakfast show at the time, so I was I probably took my eye off the ball and didn't push it as hard as I could have done. But then I got some emails. I put it up on my blog, that's right, and I got responses to the blog. And I think halfway through 2011 I got an email from someone saying, oh yeah, I'm off to court tomorrow to plead guilty to false accounting. I've just come across your blog article. I didn't realise there were other people out there like me. And I thought, if this story does not gain wide traction, this is going to keep happening. And so I went back to Private Eye and gave them another push. And Richard Brooks very kindly said, oh, this is interesting. Sorry about not replying to your earlier email. Tell me everything. And so I just gave him everything I had and spoke to him. And there's a bit of back and forth, and he did his own work on it and produced his first article in September 2011. Since then, Private Eye have obviously done great work on this. I left BBC Surrey, which gave me an element of my life back, and was very lucky to get some work presenting a programme on Channel 5, which gave me an income, but also I wasn't working every day. So on the down days, I could do my own work on the post office, and I started doing reports around the Second Sight investigation, and that brought me into contact with more people. Alan was getting very active by this stage. Yeah, and that rolled on to some one-show productions. And I think that the high point, I suppose, for me was getting the Panorama away. In answer to your initial question, the high point for me was getting the first Panorama away in 2015, because there are a lot of circumstances which came together in order for that to get commissioned, which you could say was luck and probably was luck, but was also a lot of preparation on my part. And it just so happened to fall at the right time, and we eventually got it away. And although at the time I was just glad to do a Panorama because it's Panorama, we only later find out how significant that programme, that half-hour programme, was in persuading some of the legal folk who backed the postmasters going to court and gave them succour that, you know, there was a story here that could actually be prized open through the courts. I think the most significant day in this scandal, and I still maintain this, is the first judgment that was handed down in the middle of March 2019, which was the first time anyone had sided with the postmasters, anyone at all. And it was such a damning judgment.
It was. He really did side with them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was a very, very clear indication that something was very, very rotten at the post office. And it didn't get any traction at all, that judge? I mean, that's not fair. There were people doing on-the-day stuff then, but it was at that point that I came to whistle down the studios that we're sitting in now and said, look at this judgment, it's huge. And I told the whistle-down guys about this story. And, you know, they were rigorous in asking me the questions. But, you know, when you're waving around a judgment like that, that's what set the ball rolling for the Radio 4 series, which came out more than a year later. But
Which, if you're completely new to the story, you really should listen to.
Yeah, well, thank you. That was a pretty comprehensive soup to nuts kind of introduction to this scandal, which is, I suppose, what we're doing in a very quick and dirty version of it now. If you want the sort of...
It introduces you to the characters.
Yes.
Yeah,
Alan Bates and Lee Castleton, who you mentioned, and Seema Misra and everyone. So, yeah, if you want a properly produced and not lashed together introduction to the post office scandal as it was in 2020, then, yeah, do go back to that. It's on BBC Sounds. I think it's called The Great Post Office Trial. I think it is. So what are we going to do with this podcast then, Rebecca?
Well, I want to look into some of those unanswered questions. You mentioned the role of lawyers throughout the entire thing on both sides. I'm quite interested. It might be a bit navel-gazy, but I'm quite interested in the role of the media and the role the media's played. I want to interview as many postmasters as we possibly can.
Which we did last week. Week we both went to court together and witnessed two postmasters having their convictions quashed, and recorded an interview with one of them, which will
you know,
wonderful. This podcast is a wonderful opportunity just to put long form interviews like that down, because so often they get clipped up and used in tiny little chunks in on the day news reports, or sometimes don't even get used at all. So this could be a good vehicle for, you know, just documenting what's going on.
Exactly, yeah. And, it's the UK's biggest miscarriage of justice. There's a lot of kind of fallout still to come. It's the story itself is still ongoing with the inquiry. And it's just nice to have an ability to cover it in a way that we want to.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. We don't have... Yeah, we are the editorial control of this, for better or for worse.
Yeah, there's other angles to the story that haven't yet been covered. We're chasing data on ethnicity and prosecutions and sentencing levels. So there's lots of a story that still needs to be uncovered, as well as... It would just be really interesting to I guess, get people on and talk about what ramifications it could have in the longer term.
Well, the one thing that when I do talks around my book, the one thing that the audience always ask is, when is anyone going to be held accountable?
Exactly.
For this?
Yeah.
And that is a really important question, because not only have some people made some catastrophically bad decisions, really, really bad decisions, but also I think there has been, well, at the very least, decisions made in bad faith, which maintained or would have led to people going to their graves convicted of crimes that they didn't commit. Mm. And the people involved know that. And that is why people are clamouring for some accountability in this scandal. So we can shine a light, hopefully, a tiny little light, but a light nonetheless, on that area, I think. And I think as the police investigation and the SRA investigation and the inquiry rolls on, we can start documenting the names that are now going on the record. I mean, I don't know how much of the public impact hearings you heard, but sub-postmasters were going on the record and naming names, the people who investigated them, the people who made decisions about their futures, which were wholly inept. And not everyone has the time to read through the transcripts of every public impact hearing or the forthcoming inquiry. So hopefully if we're across it, we can pull out various things that are of interest. And
there was also a really good Times piece, I think it was last year, that listed the people who have been at the top of the post office over the last 20 years. So obviously Paula Venables gets talked about a lot, but there were a lot of really senior business people who have either been a chairperson or a CEO or some form of other senior executive. So it would be interesting to perhaps go back and explore that as well.
Yeah, I mean, you very much hope all these people will be pulled before the inquiry. Yeah. But So where are we now? We're coming up to summer 2022. There's a bit of a break before the inquiry starts proper in September, although there are a couple of hearings about, there are hearings, aren't there, about compensation, which are coming up in July. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll just do what we can to cover that as it happens, but also pick up every area of interest that takes our fancy. But also, if anyone wants to get in contact with us, then we're more than happy to bring people in, interview people, chat with people about their area of expertise, and also follow up lines of inquiry that people might be interested in, that they've spotted. Another one that everyone always talks about is Fujitsu. Where are Fujitsu in all of this? I know Lord Arbuthnot is very, very keen that Fujitsu should be held responsible, not least for some of the compensation which the taxpayer is currently footing. But what mechanism that would happen by? I mean, you think about natural justice, and it's very easy as a journalist sometimes to go, well, that should happen. And everyone goes, yes, that should happen. But it never does.
We never have to worry about how that happens.
Well, exactly. And then you get lawyers involved and it all becomes extremely complicated very quickly. But there are, again, questions to Fujitsu have questions to answer. So I don't know how we're best going to wrap this up, but have we said everything we need to say?
Yeah. Great. So I think that's everything we wanted to cover for our first episode, isn't it?
I think so.
Brilliant. So we're really excited to get started properly. In our next episode, we're going to be looking at the process of overturning convictions. So how many have been overturned so far? How many will be eventually or could be eventually? What the actual process looks like.
And if you want to get in touch with the podcast, then please go to the Post Office Scandal website, postofficescandal.com. There is a contact page on there. Just send us an email and it will go into both our inboxes. If you've got any suggestions for guests, if you want to be interviewed yourself, if you've got an area that you think we should be covering, anything like that, just let us know. All feedback is very, very welcome. And of course, if you could like and subscribe or follow, I think is what you do for podcasts nowadays. If you could follow this podcast, we would be extremely grateful. And please do tell your friends.